where we came from, where we've been. They're eternal questions that say a lot about where we're going as the human race. Welcome to Ancient Mysteries on the Air. Welcome to Ancient Mysteries on the Air. I am Jim Harrelden. So glad to be with you once again. And one of the most fascinating topics out there is that of masonry and things like the Knights Templar. And we're going to have a great discussion today about a new book out. It is called The Last Refuge of the Knights Templar, The Ultimate Secret of the Pike Letters. And we have the author on the line, William F. Mann. He is the Supreme Grand Master of the Sovereign Great Priority Knights Templar of Canada. He was the Grand Archivist of the Select Masonic Order when he discovered the long-lost Pike Letters in the Grand Chancellery Files. He is also a 32nd degree Scottish Rite Mason, an 8th degree Rosicrucian, and a Knight Companion of the Red Cross of Constantine. Author of The Knights Templar in the New World, The Templar Meridians, and Templar Sanctuaries in North America. He lives in Milton, Ontario, Canada. We're so glad to have him on the line today. William, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Jim. How are you?
Very good, very good, and glad to speak with you today about this topic. So this is amazing. You discovered these letters. Can you tell us a little bit about them, these Pike letters?
Well, that's one of the most fascinating things that I've actually uncovered over a lifetime of research dealing with the Knights Templar. I think we have to back up a little and give a little bit of my background for everybody to understand where I'm coming from. 65 years ago, actually, unbeknownst to me because I was just being born in 54, my great uncle, Frederick George Mann, was Supreme Grand Master of the Sovereign Great Priory of Canada. And as I grew up, he was like my surrogate grandfather, replacing my grandfather who unfortunately died before I was born. But he would always regale me as I grew up and through my teens with stories and rituals and recitings that I had no idea that they related at all to the Knights Templar. Only about 25 years ago did I, after my mom died, did I discover that my great uncle was in fact the Supreme Grand Master of Knights Templar of Canada. And I took it upon myself to follow in his footsteps. So last August, I was actually installed for a 2-year term as Supreme Grand Master, Knights Templar here in Canada. Just prior to that, about 5 or 6 years ago, we were moving our chancellery out of our longtime office to another office. And I discovered in the basement, which was half waterlogged, a whole file of letters that from Albert Pike. Now, you may not know Albert Pike specifically, but he was a Confederate general during the Civil War. And after that, he took it upon himself. He was a great scholar. He rewrote and consolidated all the, and let's say, lost 32 degrees of the sovereign right ritual of the southern jurisdiction of the United States. Now, unfortunately, Pike has a sort of black past also. He was known for creating the rituals of the Ku Klux Klan and the Knights of the Golden Circle.
Oh, my.
So he really is a contradictory fellow. But he went on to be lifetime sovereign great commander, grand commander of the southern jurisdiction of Scottish Rite Masons in the United States. And he carried on a 30-year correspondence with the first Supreme Grand Master of the modern era, William James Burry MacLeod Moore, here in Canada. And the two couldn't be any different. Pike was this immense 300-pound sort of Santa Claus-looking fellow, and MacLeod Moore was actually a colonel in the British Army. Very rigid, very regimental, but it was interesting that they carried on this fraternal relationship for 30 years. And unbeknownst to me at the time, until I read and reread the letters, I set out the letters, and there's about 33 of them in all total. And I realized that Pike was conveying to McLemore a number of secrets on a number of levels. So I felt compelled, or whatever you want to call it, compelled to develop a fictional story, a modern-day mystery thriller, around these Pike letters, around some of the content of the Pike letters, which are actually have been authenticated by the Grand Historian Archivist out of Washington, out of the Scottish Rite. So that's really the gist of where I've gotten to at this point in time. And I found it fascinating because given my background, given my experience in masonry, I've been able to interpret these letters on a number of levels. Felt that I shouldn't write about them per se and give all the secrets away, but that those secrets are included within the letters, which I've sort of incorporated into a fictional story centered around the, amazingly, the current events of what's happening around the world today.
Now, let me ask you this. I'm sure this is a case. I just want to be clear for people listening.
Sure.
Pike has this dastardly past with this involvement with the KKK. So by no means are you condoning that or saying that's okay. But within these letters, there's some fascinating information. So you're focusing on that information. I just want to be clear for everybody.
Absolutely. You know, we all have a balancing of life within ourselves, and Pike was no saint for sure. But as I've delved into Pike's history and background, I think over his last 30 years in his capacity as Sovereign Grand Commander, he was looking to atone for a number of things that he had been involved in the, in his earlier life. He's a very complicated man. Actually, a number of Masons consider him to be almost a demigod. And the fascinating thing I found, given some of the things that are happening in the States at the current time, is that Pike's statue actually sits in front of the Scottish Rite Temple in Washington, and his statue is probably the only one that hasn't been touched or desecrated or even removed from its placement. So there's a fascinating history of the Pike itself, very complicated person, very spiritual person, and I'll leave it up to the reader to interpret a number of the letters as they're included within the book itself.
Now, I know you can't give away all the secrets, as it were, but what kind of secrets are we talking about here?
Well, interesting enough, and it's for those who really don't have a background in Knights Templar, except for what they've seen on through the movies and on TV, such as the Da Vinci Code and National Treasure, there's the idea that the Knights Templar discovered a remarkable treasure under the Dome of the Rock or the temple ruins in Jerusalem during the First Crusades and even before. And that treasure made its way ultimately to North America. Pike gives hints that he knows the location of the last refuge of the Knights Templar as they made their way across North America. And more importantly, gives indication that he knows the location of this treasure vault that was developed at the last refuge by the Knights Templar. And that location is secret, continues to this day. And that's where I've incorporated into the fictional story.
Now, the Knights Templar, can you kind of maybe give a brief primer on them? Because we throw that name around a lot, and they're shrouded as this mystery guard, and a lot of people don't really understand what their mission was and so forth. Can you give us a little primer on the Knights Templar?
Sure. The Knights Templar really originated in the 11th century, late 11th century. And there's stories of nine original knights who made their way to Jerusalem and outwardly acted as guardians of the pilgrims that were making their way to the Holy City. But inwardly, the whole history is that these knights were of lesser noble families out of France, Jewish Catholic families, and that they had information that of where the hidden relics and artifacts of the temple that was destroyed by the Romans in 70 AD lie beneath the Temple Mount. And under the guise of protecting these pilgrims, these nine original knights who came to be known as the Knights of the Poor Order of the Temple of Solomon, discovered something of fantastic value. Now, it may be religious value, monetary value, it could be historical value, a number of things, and we can speculate what the treasure could be. But that they use that treasure to essentially have the Pope and the Vatican declare them as the highest order, only reporting to the Pope, and gave them essentially carte blanche in terms of tax relief and all of those things. And they were really the Vatican's shock troops during the first through the seven Crusades. And the theory is that the Knights Templar used whatever they had discovered to actually blackmail the Vatican into providing them with the status that they achieved.
Now, when you decided to write this book, why did you go the novel route, the fictionalized route? What was the choice there?
Well, the choice there was that I think there's enough hidden secret within the letters that the story could be read on many levels, on about 10 different levels. One thing I didn't want to do is I didn't want to give away the secrets of mystery of the Knights Templar Order itself. But I also wanted to provide it on a level where people could interpret a number of things for themselves. And I found the fictional route the better way to go, because as you pointed out at the start of our conversation, there are some very sensitive issues surrounding Albert Pike and his position even today within the ultra-right movement in the States. So I felt that, let's put it this way, I felt it a little safer to fictionalize the story.
Now, and I just want to talk to you in general about Masonry, because sure. I think that some people feel, oh, there's something sinister to it. There's something darker to it than the fact that they have secrets. What are they hiding from us? I'm sure as a high-level Mason, you've heard that many, many times over the years. How do you sure. answer that when people are concerned about that or wonder about that?
Well, the easiest answer that I always provide is that I knew more secrets belonging to a fraternity and university. The Knights Templar is just one order, many Masonic orders. They're all fraternal brotherhoods. They're all charitable foundations. If you think there are sinister secrets, you couldn't be any further from the truth. As I say, even before I joined Masonry, I knew that this, based on my great uncle and my other great uncles, my father and some of his brothers, is that they're the finest gentlemen that you could ever meet. And that's really what it is. And the saying of Masonry is that Masonry takes a good man and makes him better. That's really all it is. It's a fraternal brotherhood that provides charitable organizations and other needy organizations with much needed funds.
Now, another question for you about the different degrees of Masonry. Yes. And you've reached a very high degree, because I've heard people say things like, well, you know, the low level Masons, they're kind of like the Rotary, you know, they don't really know what's going on, but the people at the top, they know what's going on. I'm sure you've heard that one too.
I've heard that one too.
Talk to us a little bit about the different degrees in the practice of Masonry.
Well, there's really two branches of Masonry now, and it's been really established since the 18th century. There's the Scottish Rite Masonry. And I'm sure that you've heard of the achieving of 32 or 33 degrees.
Yes.
And on the other side, there's York Rite Masonry. And it's essentially, all the degrees are very reflective of Scottish Rite I always like to say, without the costume and without the theatrics, Iroquois masonry was essentially established 1717 by the English. A reflection of Scottish Rite masonry, which came before them. And you start out, you go through what they call the Blue Lodge. There's three basic degrees. Then you can move up through Royal Arch chapter. You can move into Select the Master Masons. And the highest level, actually on both sides, if you want to complete the circle, is Knights Templar degree. And you're right, I have achieved the highest level, essentially being Supreme Grand Master of the Sovereign Great Priory Canada. But I can tell you that being part of the inner circle, I really am not privy to any other secrets than the standard Mason or the Blue Lodge Mason that gets 3 degrees. There's a saying that achieving the 3 degrees, the basic 3 degrees, is all you really need to understand masonry itself. When you move up through the ranks into the inner circle, yes, you are privy to certain things, but I can tell you there's no startling secrets to anybody that I talk to. So you really have to determine for yourself what the inner core secret really is. It's a very, very spiritual journey.
Now, in this book, how do you kind of ratchet up the tension? What are some of the competing motivations between some of the different parties trying to seek out this information?
Well, the bottom line is, I always get the question is, if the Templar treasure, which purportedly lies out there still to this day, if that is ever discovered, who does it belong to? And the basic answer that I provided is that it belongs to the world. But there's going to be another number of competing groups, some very extreme out there, that are going to be looking to lay claim to the Templar treasure. You can talk about the governments. You can talk about the government of Great Britain through the royalty. You can talk about the United States, Canada, North America, where the vault lies. You can talk about France, which lays claims to the original Knights Templar through their Norman descendancy. You can talk about Europe itself. It's a European treasure, supposedly, the Middle East. There are certain groups that, religious groups, extreme groups in Israel that are looking to build the third temple. If there are relics or artifacts associated with the temple, they would need certain relics and artifacts and historical documents to justify the building of a third temple. There's the Mormons. There's other groups that could lay claim. There's right-wing extremists that would like to lay claim to some of the treasure. The whole basic thing is that this treasure should belong to the world itself, not to just one group. And that is the risk of discovering and uncovering where the treasure actually lies and waiting to be rediscovered. It's of immense political and geopolitical value. And whoever lays claim to it could lay claim to supremacy around the world.
Do you believe that it currently resides within North America?
Absolutely, yes.
And you believe it's a real thing? If you remember that scene from National Treasure where they opened up that huge treasure trove and you just see massive amounts, is that the kind of thing we're talking about?
Well, we're probably talking more of spiritual treasure, the knowledge associated itself with the location of the vault versus what's in the vault. There will be monetary rewards within the vault, but that's secondary. I would say that National Treasure, I think you could divide the physical treasure that they showed by about 100.
And do you think that anybody is close to finding it?
I would say the closest person to finding it is myself. But I'm always debating the question whether it's better enough to leave things alone or to actually try to uncover it and try to share it with the world.
Yeah, that would be a tough question because it would seem that being in the position that you're in, if you have knowledge of where it's at, there'd be a lot of competing entities trying to impede your progress and causing you all kinds of problems. So sometimes I would think you would wonder if better to leave it, better to leave well enough alone.
Yes, that's exactly it. The saying is, should you leave sleeping dogs lie? Nobody shot at me yet, but...
Well, it's quite a conundrum. I mean, when you found these letters, did you realize immediately what they signified, or did it take you a while of investigation and research to determine their importance?
It didn't require any really investigation or research because, as I say, I've been immersed all my life in Masonic teachings and rituals. But it took a number of readings of the letter and sorting out the chronology of the letters to realize that there were hidden levels to the letters, which I found fascinating itself, to have the intelligence to be able to write letters on so many levels of that nature, virtually by oil lamp, is really remarkable when you think about it.
So it sounds like the letters had multiple meanings. So if, let's say, I read them, I would not see, not having that background, I wouldn't see what they would really meant. So they were almost, in a way, encoded to include those secrets. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. And it's the same as my book. I've laid everything out following the 33 degrees of Scottish Rite Masonry. To yourself, you may read it and you may realize that there are different levels, and actually appreciate one or two levels, whereas a high-ranking Mason may read the through the book and realize that there's upwards of 10 levels to every chapter.
The secrets, in terms of the secrets, they were flowing from Moore over to Pike. Is that correct?
That's correct. And Moore was collecting through his travels to England, Scotland, Wales, was collecting all the ancient rituals. What even a lot of Masons don't appreciate is that within the rituals that you recite by memory or by rote, that there's hidden meanings. Now, a lot of the rituals have been Christianized to the point that they've lost their original meaning. But if you start seeing the signs, seals, and tokens, as I say, the hidden levels within the ritual itself, you can start to pick out various little directional messages that it's very much a journey, a very much a spiritual or intellectual journey.
That's interesting. I'm looking at some of the materials here with the book, and you talk about an alliance between the Native Americans and the Templars. What was that all about?
Well, interesting enough, whereas my dad was very English and very, the family was very Masonic, the Mann family. My mother's background is she is full-blooded Algonquin Indian. And through a number of, again, through a number of rituals associated with the Medewin or the Grand Medicine Society, which I'm part of, which, interesting enough, are mirror images of the Knights Templar degrees that I practice, I've really come upon this notion that there was a strategic alliance developed through intermarriages long before, in pre-Columbian days, long before Columbus. So the whole notion is that the descendants of the original nine Knights Templar of the families, they ultimately brought the secret along with the portions of the treasure with them in the 14th century. And I don't know if you've heard the story of Prince Henry St. Clair, who was the hereditary Grand Master of the Scottish Knights Templar at that time. He was the one to consolidate the treasure and really develop strategic intermarriage through intermarriages with the natives, the ability to be essentially he knew exactly where he was going. It wasn't that they just landed on the shore, eastern shoreline of North America, and set out from there. They knew exactly where they were going because there were Knights Templar, there were Norse explorers, descendants of the original families that came before them.
Is there anything in particular that surprised you while you were doing this research?
Well, what really surprises me, and you always have to look at it in hindsight, is the amount of information that is available to anyone that starts to understand these codes. As you say, to understand the signs, seals, and tokens that are available to you. There's the saying that it's right before your eyes if you have the eyes to see. It's very much in plain sight. All of this information is available through local libraries, through Masonic libraries. It's just once you twig into the various levels, it's almost like a pathway. It's a journey itself. There's signposts, there's stop signs, there's wrong ways, there's other trails that lead to various points and junctures within the journey itself. But once you start putting it together, things start jumping right out at you that you wouldn't normally believe there were any connections or any interactions there.
Well, it's a fascinating discussion. The book is The Last Refuge of the Knights Templar. William, where can people find the book and more information on everything you do?
Well, the book is available through Amazon Indigo Chapter or available through Inner Traditions itself, www.innertraditions, all one word, .com. Or people can go to my website, www.templarsnewworld.com, to learn more about my various books. But the best way is to order through Amazon or through Inner Traditions itself. My first three books, which I sort of categorize as a Templar journey, or Templar trilogy, nonfiction books, have actually sold very well, much to my surprise. They've become bestsellers over in Europe and in the States. People in Canada are much more conservative, not open to talk of this nature, but I find that people in the United States are very open and can very much appreciate probably a lot more than what we appreciate in Canada here. So those books are available, and the official release date of The Last Refuge of the Knights Templar is April the 7th.
Well, very good. William Mann, thank you so much for joining us today on Ancient Mysteries on the Air.
You're welcome, Jim. Thank you very much.
And thank you for tuning in to Ancient Mysteries on the Air. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you next time. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.